Hare Krishna. Welcome all the devotees and guests for this month's Parivartan. The month of Kartik, as we all know, is so very auspicious. Lord Krishna, he not only performed some of his sweetest of all pastimes, but also they were very much instructive, the lessons which we learn from the sweet pastimes of Krishna are very pertinent for we all sadhakas. And in those lines we have the topic for this month, God of law versus God of love. One time in a church, there were a few children who were making some mischief. And the father of the church, who was getting disturbed because of these mischief mongers, he just held these children and with a stern look and with a grave voice, he asked them, "Where is God?" He was trying to instill some fear within these children. And these children were petrified. They were shivering, they were trembling. Again and again the father was asking, "Where is God?" And they were speechless. Somehow they let go of the hold of the father and they ran. They ran to their house. And on the loft, they went on the loft, and for the whole day, they were hiding themselves over there. And the parents were, you know, frantically searching for the kids. And finally, when they could locate them, hiding themselves on the loft, "What happened? What are you doing up here?" "We don't know. But something terrible has happened in the church." What happened? "It seems that the church has lost God." And the father kept on asking me, "Where is God? Where is God?" So, yeah, we do some mischief, we may steal something, but I'm not God. We can never attempt to do that. Now, when we talk about understanding God, sometimes like this, it is out of some kind of fear. Of course, we'll be discussing what are the different instincts or impetuses by which we see people approaching God. But since we are all trying to practice Krishna consciousness in this Hare Krishna movement, and even if someone of you who have come for the very first time to the ISKCON temple, International Society for Krishna Consciousness, so when we look at Krishna, he is not holding, you know, a measure in his hand. As we see, there is a scale, measuring scale, which is held by one school of thought, in which they think that God is always measuring our life. Tarazu, he is measuring our life, that our pious activities and sinful activities keep measuring, and he is called the just God, and he is holding the scepter of punishment or justice. But herein we see, what is our Krishna holding? He is holding flute. Now, what does that signify? Someone holding flute or playing flute, what does that signify? Have you ever seen in a courtroom the judge playing flute? Courtroom is a place where justice is very much predominantly, you know, seen and talked about. But, you know, it's all, you know, the black clothes and that kind of a wig and a hat, and there is a police department also functional over there, escorts and witnesses, proofs, law books. The whole mood is very intense. Imagine the judge entering the courtroom playing flute. It's something very odd. Doesn't seem to fit in that particular atmosphere. So herein, if Krishna is God, if Krishna is the person responsible to make judgments about our life, we who are totally dependent wholesale on a God like Krishna, then it's an obvious question that, is it right on his part to just keep playing flute? Is he responsible? Does he seem to be a responsible God? Or he's in his own world, absorbed in his flute playing leela? There was a German philosopher. He wanted to write a thesis on God. It's a real story. This German philosopher wanted to write a thesis on God. And he was visiting various countries and their religions and their faiths, and he happened to come to India because he had heard that you'll get a big huge market over here, you know, a lot of variety. So he came to India and he went to so many temples. There were, and we know, so many temples. India is full of, you know, whether you know or not, there will be a temple somewhere. You may not even figure out what is the deity inside, but worship is going on. So when he came to India, he saw so many, in our language, the demigod temples, the devatas, and, you know, Durga, Kali, Shiva, Ganesh. And he saw that everyone was busy with some kind of activity, you know, like some kind of responsibility, you know, vanquishing demons or establishing some kind of justice, all the devatas in their deity forms in the temple. But when he saw Krishna on the altar, and that was a Gaudiya Math, Bhakti Siddhanta Saru Thakur's Gaudiya Math he visited. And when he saw Krishna just playing flute, he came to his conclusion, the end of his search. He said, this person has to be God. Because if God has to do something, how can he be God then? He has to be independent. He has to be, as we call, Swarat. And he has to be a person who is the best delegator. So Lord Krishna, he is not an irresponsible God. He is the most intelligent, most astute in regards to his management skills. Who is the best manager? A best manager is that person who doesn't have to do anything. Because, and yet things get done. That is very important. So even if Krishna has to kill a demon, we have so many demon killing pastimes of Krishna. Even if Krishna has to kill a demon, the Shyamsundar Krishna over here, what we see, playing his flute, celebrated flute. The Shyamsundar Krishna doesn't have to bother about even killing of the demons. There is the expansion of Krishna called Vasudev. The Vasudev expansion, that aspect of Krishna. And any incarnations coming, then there is so many Vishnus. We have Karanodakshaya Vishnu, Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And then of course, what to speak of so many devatas, 33 crore of them, all deputed. And they are not like, the government officers of our constitution, they are very, very dutiful, responsible in their own department. So, this German philosopher, he later on became disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and his conclusion was that he has to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead, of course he didn't use that term, so it was, you know, the same lines, that the Supreme Person has to be the Supreme Enjoyer. And enjoyment means love. When we talk about enjoyment, it's all about love, bliss, ananda and all that stuff. So, herein, I found a very interesting picture. I was just googling and I found that a cruel god, you know, I just typed cruel god and this image came. Very interesting image. This is, you know, under the heading cruel god. So, over here if you can understand what this image is trying to portray, the eye of God is, you know, looking very cruelly at this person, and this person is so much in fear, as the eye of God is observing the person's actions. You know, as it is said that one may try to escape the laws made by man, but the eyes of God are everywhere. हिंदी में वो बोलते होंगे कानून के हाथ बहुत लंबे हैं, लेकिन भगवान के हाथ लंबे ही नहीं, बहुत ज्यादा हैं, अनगिनत हैं और सब जगह है. नॉट ओनली लॉन्ग बट मेनी नंबर विश्वरूप, यू नो द यूनिवर्सल फॉर्म ऑफ द लॉर्ड. सो हियर इन व्हेन गॉड इज सीन विथ दिस काइंड ऑफ अ विजन, or when God is looking at people with this kind of a vision, he is seen as a cruel God. You know, a God which is always holding the punishment rod. They have that concept. In the West, the concept of God is that he is holding the punishment rod, and you better rectify yourself, otherwise eternal damnation to hell. Eternal damnation. If you don't surrender, if you don't believe, if you don't have faith, then you will be eternally doomed to hell. Now this is something very scary. Now, it's very interesting, this month of Kartik. As against this, we have a photo depicting one pastime of Krishna, which appears to be a total contrast. Just see. Just try to see both the pictures now. Now herein, our Damodar is also in the same posture as the other one, the other guy in the first picture. Huh? Same posture. Now if you introduce to someone that this is our God, which one? That one. And we have been for the last whole month, we've been offering lamps to this God. And look at the expression on his face. He is petrified. Rudantam muhurnetra yugmam rijantam karam bhoja yugmena satanka netram muhushvasa kampatri rekhanka kantha Sthitagraiva Damodaram Bhakti Baddham. So what kind of law do we see over here? Crying profusely, and that too afraid of whom? This Supreme Personality of Godhead is afraid of his own mother. And so much so, now of course before that we have to understand that who is afraid of him. Before understanding whom he is afraid of, we have to understand who is afraid of Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, one of the incarnations of Krishna, that is Kapila Dev. No, not, don't think the other one. The incarnation of Krishna. Bona fide incarnation of Krishna. Original Kapila Dev. So, Kapila Muni, he, in one of the verses, explaining about himself, which means he is Vishnu Tattva, explaining about himself, he says, Madbhayat vati vatoyam suryastapati madbhayat varshatindro dahat agnir mrityuscharati madbhayat. This word bhaya is so many times used in this verse. So Kapila Muni is saying that, my dear mother Devahuti, please try to understand what is my position in this creation, in this material world. All the elements are functioning because of my fear. The wind is blowing because it is fearful of me. Indra is showering rains because of my fear. Surya stapati mad bhayat. The sun planet is giving out its sunlight because of my fear. And ultimately, of all things, death. Death personified. Everyone fears death. So, personified death or personified fear is fearful of me. Now, this verse is quite fearful now. And this personality, Kapila Muni, is just an expansion of the expansion of the expansion of Krishna. We have to understand that calculation also. So the origin of Kapila Muni, Krishna over here, is crying profusely. And he is not putting up a show. He is actually fearful of Mother Yashoda. And it is explained in this verse that Muhushvasa Kampa, there is Kampan because of heavy breathing. And definitely heavy breathing is generally when somebody is in a lot of fear. So there is heavy breathing, and the three beautiful lines on the neck of Krishna, they are also having a shiver in them. So the beauty is explained. Even if when Krishna is fearful so much, to the core, he is absolutely beautiful. Now who in this material world, where in this fear of expression of fear, will appear beautiful? But Krishna, even though he seems so fearful, but he still remains the all beautiful personality of Godhead. So herein, it's a very revolutionary concept. We are worshipping someone who is so fearful of his own mother, and that too, what's the offense? What's he so fearful about? Now in this material world, people, they keep committing so many sins and still shamelessly they roam around. And yeah, sometimes when, you know, they get a kick of this material world, laws of this material nature, then there is some fear is seen in them. But herein, he has stolen some butter, and that too in his own home. Not that, you know, he had some kind of a conspiracy, a scam of some big butter company, you know, like hundreds and crores of some loot mar from, you know, some big butter company. No. From his own house, and that too, he was being very charitable. Mother Yashoda became angry on Krishna because Krishna, it's not that when Krishna was eating, Mother Yashoda was angry. No, Krishna was feeding to the monkeys. And that also had a very, very significant shastric reason why he was feeding the monkeys. Because the monkeys had helped him in the previous incarnation as Lord Ram. So he was repaying the debt by offering them butter. For that reason, now Lord Krishna, you know, if he, you know, could have taken the punishment of the rod of punishment in his hand. You know, Mother Yashoda, she is an ordinary cowherd woman. What was, you know, her capacity to counteract the fear aspect of Krishna? But herein it is explained that Bhakti Baddham, that he was bound by the love of Mother Yashoda, which is beyond all the laws. So that's what we are coming back to the topic for our discussion. That when it comes to love, as Krishna reciprocates with his devotees like Mother Yashoda, and Mother Yashoda reciprocates with Krishna, we cannot put any laws over there that, you know, according to this law, Mother Yashoda is loving Krishna, or Krishna is loving Mother Yashoda. Forget about the love between Yashoda and Krishna. When people talk about love in this material world, so-called love in this material world, what are the different conceptions people have about the love of this material world? Everything is fair in love and war. Everything is fair in love and war. And, you know, there is so much, you know, talking going on about the love aspect, that, you know, there are books written, movies made, you know, people have dedicated their lives, and everywhere you see that actually people are looking for love, talking about love, and trying to get into love also in a relationship. But how many times do we find that that love is actually being established? What is that pure love? First of all, that itself is like $1 million or $1 billion or $1 trillion question nowadays. What is that real love? So over here, it's a very interesting, you know, phenomena being observed. What do you understand over here by these few images? What's happening? Does this look like something which is uncommon? Very much uncommon. And these are not superimposed images. This is real images. It's not a painting, first of all. It's a real image. So what do we understand over here in regards to our discussion? Is there some kind of a connection with what we are discussing? Okay, let me make it a little simpler. Is there a law which we would expect generally when we see these two living entities together? Law of nature. And what is that law of nature? Obviously, the cheetah, is it the cheetah? Yeah, the cheetah is not supposed to lick the deer, is not supposed to cuddle and, you know, so show those kind of expressions to the deer. Oh my dear, deer, where were you? The cheetah is supposed to just brutally kill, not just kill. You must have seen sometimes those, you know, animal channels. You know, how brutally these carnivorous animals like cheetah especially, what they do, what the cheetah within few minutes would have done to this deer. So herein we see that there is a certain natural law which we all have experienced in regards to these two entities or creatures. But now what are we seeing over here? There is a total 360 degree shift in the expression. The law has turned into love. Now, if I ask you, is there any logic which we use by which we can prove that this is something which makes sense? With any logic, with any kind of intelligence, with any kind of reasoning, I'll tell you, there was video which I had seen a year ago, and this was about the wonders of our creation, and in which, in this video, it was shown the birth of turtles, small little turtles, that how they take birth, and so many of them in number, and you know, they come out of their shells and they immediately run into the nearest body of water to protect themselves. Just newly born little turtles walking into the nearest body of water to protect themselves from the predators. And one of the predators who is always lurking around the body of water where these turtles are born is the crocodile. Definitely, for those little turtles, the crocodile is quite a big enough predator. So, in this video, it was shown that the crocodile, and sometimes you can't even make out whether it's a stone or it's a crocodile, you know, it's a dead matter somewhere, or it's actually a living creature like a crocodile. So, it was shown that how the turtles were born, and immediately after their birth started running towards the body of water, that pond. And you know, it's like, you know, how they have those kind of footages, the slow motion they show, small little turtles, and you see it was that kind of footage, and all these turtles are running into the pond, and one last turtle, somehow he just trips and is not able to reach the pond before the crocodile intervenes, opens its huge mouth, the jaws, takes the little turtle inside, and then I don't know how they take the camera, you know, and inside the jaws, the little turtle is stuck inside the jaws. What could be the destiny now of this little turtle inside the jaws of this crocodile? But then, as you know, the audience, like I was in the audience watching this, you know, like even you who's hearing now, you must be, then, what happened? So, the crocodile takes the little turtle and it doesn't close its jaws. It takes it like that and leaves it in the body of water. A total expression of love. The law said the crocodile had to finish off that turtle. But then it was told in that particular video that that crocodile had recently lost its own little one. And because the crocodile had lost its own little one, so the crocodile, mother crocodile, she was a mother crocodile. So this mother crocodile had that kind of a sympathy. So we see that how even in these kind of animal species also, wherein their consciousness is so much, you know, into just living on the instincts. You know, eating, sleeping, mating, and just that's that, those instincts. But when it comes to, they also have feelings of, you know, love and affection and sympathy. Many times it is seen that when a calf is taken away from the cow, tears roll down from the eyes of the cow. That's love. So, when we are talking about the laws which we are accustomed to, and then we see love somewhere over those laws, it just surprises us. We are taken by surprise that, like how Prabhupada, when he started loving the hippies, these hippies were taken by surprise. Is there anyone on this planet who can love us? Is there anyone like that on this planet who can love us? Here, this Swamiji, 70-year-old, doesn't even know us. He's not even from our culture. He's not even from our country. And he's coming and expressing so much love. Prabhupada would cook for them, clean their remnants, serve them, cook for them, feed them. That transformed their hearts. It was not the philosophy. It was not the miracles, the cheap miracles. The transformation of the heart of these hardcore, you know, addicted hippies. It was because of love. In fact, when Srila Prabhupada started to express his affection and love, which he had received from the parampara, you know, these hippies, they were like parasites in the society over there, in the American culture, in the 60s. They were like parasites, and, you know, the government, you know, for them, these people were like a neck in the pain, a headache. And they were considering them as a nuisance, a burden, like Varna Sankar, what we would call them. Unwanted progeny like that. And when they saw that these people not only are giving up those, you know, marijuana, cocaine, heroin, LSD and these kind of heavy addictions, but they are giving up tea and coffee and they are following the four regulative principles and chanting Hare Krishna and getting up 4 o'clock in the morning, taking cold shower bath. That was like, that there couldn't be a greater miracle than that for them. So in Chicago, the what we would call a police commissioner of Chicago came to Prabhupada. What magic pill have you given them? What is this magic pill? We, with the whole department, we have been trying to figure out how to, you know, make these hippies come to senses. And what have you done? What is your formula? And Prabhupada said, formula, chanting, dancing, feasting. In fact, you know, this the police official, he asked Prabhupada that if you need any help, you know, from our side, what we could do. Prabhupada said, yes, give me a big hall and I can transform all of these young derelicts into hippies, into happies, as Prabhupada used to say. A big hall for what? A big hall so that everyone can come together and chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. They can chant Hare Krishna. They can have Krishna Prasadam, by which the body, mind and soul, complete package can be purified. So what Prabhupada essentially, through his love and affection, what he showed was, it's there within everyone. Don't cover it up with your so-called conditions and laws. And therefore, when we talk about unconditional love, it's very wonderfully said over here, where there is love, there are no conditions. And where there are conditions, there is no love. And in this material world, how many times do we find, again, the so-called love, and within the bracket or small letters, so many conditions. I am in love with you. Why? Because I don't just see your name, I see the degrees after your name also. In fact, I see first that, the degrees after your name and the house behind you in the photograph and the car, you know, which you are resting your hand on. I am seeing the car, the house, the degree, the job, And when these conditions are fulfilled, then yes, my unconditional love now. Now it is unconditional. So, we find in Krishna consciousness, this particular term unconditional love itself is such a foreign term. Yeah, people talk about love and all that stuff, but unconditional love? It's a very scary term, unconditional love, in which Srimati Radharani is praying to Krishna, even if you trample upon me, even if you embrace me, even if you ignore me, neglect me, you will still be my Lord and Master, and my love for you will never be, you know, diminished. Even for a fraction, not even for a moment, not even in the time and space, in the quantity and the quality also. So of course we can go on and on and on in regards to the unconditional love expressed by the pure devotees of Krishna, and that's because Krishna is manifesting that aspect of God which is full of love. So now, if we take the two sides of God, we have the God's greatness and we have the God's sweetness. So, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we are introduced to the greatness of God. And that's how Arjun also understood the greatness of Krishna, saw the universal form. And of course, not just the universal form, but the way Krishna was, you know, vanquishing all the doubts of Arjun. Arjun was, you know, he was, you know, within himself cursing and asking for forgiveness. That, my dear Krishna, I behaved with you just like, you know, an ordinary friend. I slept with you, ate with you, joked with you. And then of course, Krishna's sweetness is such that Krishna said, no, no, no. Don't talk all this. I just want you to be the same friend of mine. So when we talk about greatness and sweetness, are these terms paradoxical to each other? What is your understanding as practitioners of Krishna consciousness? Are these terms contrasting each other? Contradicting each other. Greatness and sweetness. Okay, what do we require? Do we require the greatness of Krishna or do we require the sweetness of Krishna? Sweetness. Huh? Rasgulla, gulab jamun. Huh? No karela sabji. Huh? Okay. How many of you say we require greatness over the sweetness or only greatness? Yes, my dear sir? Greatness. Okay. Only greatness. No sweetness, huh? Sweetness can be? Sweetness can be revealed. That's what you are saying. Okay. No, we are talking in regards to God. And bona fide God, huh? not a fake one. Greatness is already there. God is already great. So many times we read behind some rickshaw or truck or like that. Yes. Yeah, this is a wonderful point. Without knowing the greatness, we cannot appreciate the sweetness. Nice point. Anyone else? There has to be greatness in sweetness. Yes. Krishna is a greatly sweet God. Or sweetly great God. His sweetness is so great that we may have diabetes. That's like good terms. Yes, very much there has to be a healthy combination of the Lord's greatness and sweetness. Why? Because if we see, Lord's greatness instills faith, and Lord's sweetness instills love. Now, many times we find people going to one extreme. That, like we saw that particular image, God is great, God is powerful, and therefore I should be always fearful of God. And yes, because of his greatness, the faith element automatically comes. But then God is not wanting just our faith. God wants our love. And therefore, there is only one relationship which can be established with God as regards to we all living entities, and that is love. It's only love, on the basis of love, can we reciprocate with God. And of course we have Shraddha, then of course Bhajan, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajan Kriya, Anartha Nivritti and all that, and ultimately leads to Prem. That's love. So we have to understand the greatness, and when we understand the greatness, then that greatness will lead us into that pure love. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his Chaitanya Sikshamrit, he explains that these are the four levels. And we had talked about in the beginning also, the four impetus using which a conditioned living entity approaches God. The first and the lowest is fear. It's called Bhaya Buddhi. That out of fear, if I don't surrender and have faith in this particular God of mine, then I'll be eternally doomed. All of that stuff. So there is the fear, Bhaya Buddhi. Higher than fear is hope. That there is some kind of hope. Like one of my friends, he was saying that, he confessed, he said, my wife considers me as God. I said, really? Pati Parameshwar type? I said, yeah, my wife considers me as God because she takes no notice of mine until she wants something. And many times we find that the concept of God is also understood like that. That there is no notice of God until and unless something is wanted. So, herein, that's called Asha Buddhi, the second level. It's a little higher than fear, that at least you are looking at God, that he will give something, not just give punishment, but give something which I can run my life on. So that's called Asha Buddhi. Then higher than that is duty. Okay, you know, this is my dutiful responsibility to reciprocate with God for whatever I am receiving, the gifts I am receiving. Therefore, you will find, you know, many times people in so many faiths, they are praying to God before they eat their food, that, you know, you have given us this day's bread, so therefore we will reciprocate as a dutiful servant of yours, as a dutiful worshipper of yours. But then ultimately Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, it is love. Unless there is love, all the other factors will fade away. They are going to fade away. Why? Because if a person loses the fear factor, becomes an atheist. Loses the hope in God, again becomes an atheist. And if a person, because living in this material world, there are so many chances that we may get drifted into being irresponsible. So therefore, when the motivation is simply based on fear, hope, duty, then that motivation is not long lasting. Forget about being eternal. It's not long lasting enough in itself. And therefore, we find that when rules and regulations are very much imposed upon us, then rules and regulations may make us do so many things. Like, if you through your cyber surfing, if you have come across this concept that there are certain things which can only happen in India. So recently, I was surfing through, and which can happen in only in India. I came across certain laws which are imposed in India. And of course, this might sound a little hilarious once, but what is the mood behind is instilling fear to motivate someone to do something in a rightful manner. So now you will see some signs, and of course, don't mind the English which these signs talk about, because it can only happen in India. The first sign: instilling fear by imposing some law. This is a real signboard, no parking. Now, it's supposed to be flattened, but instead of flattened, it is said flattered. So, just see the mood behind this particular sign, that if you park your vehicle, then this is something which is going to happen to your vehicle. So immediately somebody bringing the car over there looks at this sign, will be motivated not to park. Why? What is the motivation? Fear. Motivated not to park because of the fear element after the, in the second line, in the third line, whatever. Of course, if a person knows a little bit of English, we'll be having a good laugh at that. Then, this is interesting. Warning to tourists: do not laugh at the natives. This is at some kind of a holy place, some pilgrimage. The warning given to the tourist. This is from our south of India. I don't know what that word means. Maybe something in South India. Viola 2 would be punished. Or anyone who is violating, maybe. But still, there is some kind of fear which is being imposed. And this is something I found, that we only have 4 regulative principles. Here in this list, this is in a restaurant, and there are more than 20, if you can read. No division of beverages, no smoking, fighting, credit, outside food, sitting long, talking loud, spitting, bargaining, water to outsiders, change, telephone, matches, discussion, gambling, newspaper, combing, beef, hard liquor, not allowed, no address inquiry. Now sometimes, people say that you Hare Krishna, there are so many no's. Look at this. Just to go in a restaurant and eat something, there are 20 regulative principles over here, not just 5, which one has to obey and follow. And sounds to be like a law book. It's, very hardcore laws. And another interesting one: Ram Ganga River is inhabited by crocodiles. Swimming is prohibited. Survivors will be prosecuted. And what about those who don't survive? They are taken care of by the crocodiles. And also be like, director, CTR, I don't know what all that means. And this was the most interesting one. Jine punarjanam mein purna vishwas hai keval vahi samip jane ka khatra uthaye. Only those who strongly believe in reincarnation. So atheists are not allowed. Maybe some kind of a safari. Wherein we see that, the motivation for people to follow a certain code of conduct is fear. And then we discussed about hope. Allurement is given. In hope, there is allurement is given. And this was something very interesting. Again, you have to observe it closely. Allurement to come for a feast. Maybe I don't have to explain much. I may not even know many of them. So these are all nowadays innovative ways and means to attract someone for a feast. So similarly, we find that in this material world, many times religion is also portrayed like this. In order to attract people for becoming followers of a certain path, like you must have heard many of the conversions which take place. The allurements are given. You will get a job, or your loan will be cleared off. These kind of things. Your loan will be cleared off, you will get a permanent job and all that stuff. So then they have nothing to do with whom are they worshipping. Who is that God? What that God will do to his life in regards to advancing in spirituality. But job is taken care of, loan is taken care of, then this is what my faith is then. So all these things, they are simply trying to fool us around. And therefore Srimad Bhagavatam says, dharma projita kaitavatra paramo nirmat saranam satam. That ujjita, pro ujjita, thrown out. Just like you have some dirty water, dirty wash water, how you throw it out. So Bhagavatam says pro ujjita is like that. That all this cheating religion which talks about that you follow this particular path or this law, and these are the material remunerations which you will get in return. Srimad Bhagavatam says, this is the second verse of Bhagavatam, by the way. In the first canto, this is the second verse, dharma projitta, thrown away. That before, if you want to enter into the Bhagavatam, first understand that throw away all the fake currencies. And therefore, they are called fake currencies. The so-called religions which are simply based on fear, hope and duty, they are all like fake currencies. And the only currency which works in the Srimad Bhagavatam is the currency of love. That we are talking about unconditional love. Ahaituki, apratihata. That is what we are talking about. Now, in our Vedic scriptures, they talk about niti. Like you must have heard so many different kinds of nitis. We have Chanakya niti, we have Vidur niti. What does niti means? Niti means it's a way of living. Just like breathing. How necessary is breathing for us? Similarly, the nitis are as essential for us as breathing is essential for us. So, there are these three kinds of niti which our scriptures talk about. The first is called Brihaspati niti. And in Brihaspati niti, it says no matter what, one should never ever break the codes of morality. Hell or high waters, one has to be truthful, honest. This is called Brihaspati Niti. And we have Yudhishthir Maharaj, who was, like follower of this Brihaspati Niti. That, absolutely no cheating, no lying, no complications of such matter. And of course, there are many others also. We have Mahatma Gandhi, who comes in that category also. In this land of India. So this is a very, very interesting niti which is explained in our scriptures called the Brihaspati one. The second is the opposite, exact opposite of Brihaspati niti. It's called Kanika niti. It's mentioned in the Mahabharata. No matter what, you get your things done by hook or by crook. And why this niti is called the Kanika niti? Anyone knows? Because in Mahabharata, there is this episode when the Pandavas returned from the forest, they exhibited such super excellent behavior, the Pandavas, They were impeccable, flawless. And that created fear in the hearts of Dhritarashtra and Duryodhan. The impeccable, super excellent behavior, cultured, civilized behavior of the Pandavas created fear in the hearts of Dhritarashtra and Duryodhan party. So Dhritarashtra, just imagine the shamelessness of Dhritarashtra. You know, Dhritarashtra, after the Pandavas returned from the forest, Dhritarashtra is telling to the Pandavas that, see, anyways, now you are used to living in the forest. So you might as well continue. Let Duryodhan, you know, he is used to live in the palace. Just imagine, you know, the shamelessness of this person, that he is, you know, he has the audacity that after punishing them for 13 years, this is what he is saying. So then Dhritarashtra, he was trying to plot against the Pandavas, and then he called his expert, you know, whatever, Harvard return, Mr. Kanika. So this Kanika, he had a niti over here, you know. This Kanika, this person, he was the one who plotted the Varanavrat Lakshagraha, you know, that episode, that scandal. That was plotted by Kanika. You all know the Varanavrat wax house in which they were conspired to be burnt alive, the Pandavas. So this Kanika, his niti is, he was telling to Dhritarashtra. It's mentioned in the Mahabharata, Kanika's niti to Dhritarashtra, he's mentioning that if you want to enjoy, the only principle of life is enjoyment. That's Kanika niti. Nowadays also you find, you know, although in the Mahabharata, you know, it's, you know, the Sanskrit is used, in the Vedic terms are used, but nowadays what people are following is more or less the Kanika niti. Somehow or the other, you, by hook or by crook, you enjoy. And he says that if you are satisfied, you know, like we have the anarthas, kaam, krodh, lobh, moh, matsar. So according to Kanika, the anartha is satisfaction, contentment, being peaceful. These are all anarthas for your progress. If you are satisfied, if you are content, if you are peaceful, then you are diseased. Like we say, if you are lusty, if you are angry, if you are, you know, proud, then you are diseased. So Kanika says, if you are satisfied, content, then you are diseased. You should have sleepless nights. You should be always restless, passionate, aggressive. Then you can achieve something. And Kanika, he told to Dhritarashtra that as far as you or anyone who is the king, you may not be a believer in God. You can be an atheist. You should be an atheist. A king should be an atheist. But his followers, he should always keep theist as followers. He should, none of his ministers should be an atheist. So Dhritarashtra asks, why? Because only a theist will be loyal. Just see the hypocrisy in this. He's telling to Dhritarashtra, as a king, you should be an atheist, but your mukhya mantris and all your entourage, your retinue should all be theist, because only they will be loyal to you. If you have an atheist working under you, he will at any point of time disregard you, disown you. So nowadays, what do we find? So-called politicians, the kings of the administrators of our society. Like there was one politician who was making a speech, and he started his speech that, you know, my father, he used to go to masjid also, he used to go to church also, he used to go to, you know, Gurudwara also. And there was no expression in the audience, you know, everyone was like, no clapping, because they are used to always have, after 2-3 minutes somebody should clap. So nobody clapped. They said, and my mama, he was a strict follower of, you know, Jainism. Nobody clapped. And my you know, grandfather, he was a strict follower of Buddhism, and everyone clapped because everyone was from that religion sitting. And he said, and I also follow Buddhism. He was just waiting that for which religion they will clap, and next political speech somewhere else, he will again start like this. And if somebody is clapping for some other religion, so I am following that religion. So, in the name of secularism in India, what's happening in India is all humbug. No, humble, humbug. You know, it's all, you know, a very, very distorted khichdi. Not the ISKCON one. Perverted khichdi. And, you know, in the name of, like, how, you know, we are embracing everything now. What was that? One of the most deluding songs of the cinema in the yesteryears. Mera juta hai Japani. Ye patloon English thani. Sar pe lal topi Rusi. How the hell your dil will be Hindustani then? All over you is, you know, the multinational companies surrounding, and then you are saying my dil is Hindustani. It's all nonsense. Did I sing right? So this is the, now you see, in Krishna's time, see, Krishna, he destroyed so many of these great kings like Jarasan. So 17 times Krishna, he defeated Jarasan. And after defeating, like finally when Jarasan was killed by Bhima, when Jarasan was killed by Bhima, Krishna, he appointed, he didn't take the kingdom. Krishna didn't tell the Pandavas, you rule over Magad. Krishna, he asked the son of Jarasan, Sahadev, that you become the king now. When the Pandavas, when they were ruling Hastinapur, Krishna never said one of the Yadavas, Are isko bhi ek nokri do na. He didn't say to Arjun, tumko yudh dilaya ek mere Yadav ko bhi nokri do na. That was not the protocol of the policy. Why? Because Krishna was following the niti that somebody from that particular society should be ruling because he knows the pulse of the people. And now we have in India somebody from Italy. That's a sorry state of affairs. Somebody who is not even from our country is considered to be, I hope you understand. And you know, somebody from some other country is made as, you know, the ruling power. So of course these are like when Jawaharlal Nehru, this was, this is a real thing. That when India got independence, after that he was the first prime minister. He was the first prime minister? Yeah, he was the first prime minister. And that time the army general, who was supposed to be the first army general of the independent India. So there was a meeting and they were all trying to decide that who would be the first army general. So this was a proposal by our Jawaharlal Nehru that, you know, we should have somebody from Britain. Some Britisher should be the first army general of the independent India. Why? Because we are not experienced. We are not experienced. And at that time, there was one great soldier from the army. I forgot his name. Rathod, yeah. Captain Rathod. And he presented. He told over there, and it was like a big thing for him to say in front of the first prime minister. He said, if you say that we do not have experienced army generals and therefore we'll bring it from Britain as a Britisher, then we do not have experienced prime ministers also. Should we get it from Britain? And that time, our General Kariyappa, he was appointed as the army general. So this Kanika Niti is not that Kanika has died 5,000 years ago and there is no Kanika Niti going on now in this, you know, land of India. So it's a very, very deadly kind of a niti in which he said to Dhritarashtra that when you kill someone, you cry for that person. After slaughtering that person, you cry for that person so that everyone will think that you killed that person not out of your own consent. Which means basically the points which Kanika made to Dhritarashtra was, you just be a super class hypocrite. Then only you can succeed. Only if you are a super class hypocrite, you can excel. If you are that honest and, you know, transparent and clean and all that stuff, you'll be nowhere. And he said, that's what the Pandavas are suffering, because they are truthful, they are honest and all of that stuff. So this Kanika Niti is something which is very dangerous, and many times in our practice of devotional service also, this Kanika Niti, because Kanika Niti is, you can justify anything for anything. That is Kanika Niti. Like, you know, there was a drunkard and he was trying to justify his drinking. So this drunkard went to one pujari. The pujari just did his aarti in the temple, and the drunkard went to the pujari, caught hold of the pujari, and the drunkard was already, one bottle was inside. And the drunkard held the pujari and asked, Sansar mein kaun sabse bada? And the pujari, you know, was pujari of a huge temple. He said, Mandir sabse bada. Mandir sabse bada, to dharti pe kyun khada? And the pujari said, dharti sabse badi. Are dharti sabse badi, to sheshnag pe kyun khadi? पुजारी से शेषनाग वो सबसे बड़ा. अरे शेषनाग सबसे बड़ा तो शिवजी के गले में क्यों पड़ा? नाउ द पुजारी इज गेटिंग कंफ्यूज. शिवजी सबसे बड़ा. अरे शिवजी सबसे बड़ा तो पर्वत पे क्यों खड़ा? ही सेड, तो पर्वत सबसे बड़ा. अरे पर्वत सबसे बड़ा तो हनुमान जी के हाथ पे कैसे पड़ा? So the pujari was totally confused. This is Kanika Niti, to confuse. So the pujari was totally confused. Arre bab, tu bata, kaun sabse bada? Haan, main batata. Ye samsar mein wo sabse bada, jo puri ek botal andar karke do pairon pe khada. So, Kanika is this kind of a person. That whether it comes to materiality or spirituality, we'll use anything to justify one's doings. Wrongdoings. Huh? Wrongdoings. Then Shukraniti. Shukraniti is what Krishna followed in Mahabharata. Dharma should be applied according to time, place and circumstances. In fact, Shukracharya, this is coming from Shukracharya. Although Shukracharya in the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam is not very much appreciated. Why Shukracharya is not appreciated, although his niti was this? In fact, Shukracharya told to Bali Maharaj in the 8th canto that even if you have to speak a lie, you speak a lie, but under certain circumstances, when you have to protect a cow from its killing. So, his niti was not like just, you know, a blanket rule, as they say, which cannot be changed, or, you know, no flexibility in that. And this is something which in the Mahabharata, when Krishna was using against Dronacharya, using against Karna, so it was. Why, of course, let's take now, why Shukracharya was rejected by Bali Maharaj? Because above these three nitis, Bali Maharaj, when he saw that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has come, and here is an opportunity for me to surrender unto the Supreme Lord. So surrender unto Krishna is the highest niti. It is beyond Brihaspati, Kanika and Shukra, even Shukra, beyond Shukra niti. So Bali Maharaj said that herein I have got the opportunity to surrender to Krishna. Krishna is there standing. Why should I follow your Shukraniti? So even Shukraniti can be disregarded when it comes to Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. And that can be established only on the platform of love. Surrender wholesale unto Krishna can be established only on the platform of love. That's what we are making the point over here. So whether the law, niti can also be termed as a law, whether there is the Brihaspati law or whether there is the Kanika law or whether it is Shukra law, all of these laws are subservient to what? Smartavya satatam Vishnur vismartavya na jatochit sarva vidhi nishedhyasur etayor eva kinkara. All the vidhi and nished, they are all kinkar of love unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, in our sadhana bhakti, we have to measure our sadhana bhakti. This is a graph, not a very complicated one. It begins with anartha nivritti. And many times, many months, years, lifetimes might pass. Anartha nivritti. So, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he had this wonderful proposal for a sadhaka. That from anartha nivritti, we have to reach artha pravritti. Artha pravritti is love for Krishna. Anartha nivritti, we all know. That clearing off the unwanted things, the misgivings, the contaminations, the anarthas. And therefore, this word anartha. Artha means something which is valuable, or currency we can say. So in the hellish planets, there is papa currency. In the heavens, it is punya currency. If you have punya, that currency you can enter heaven. If you have sufficient pap currency, you can enter hell. And that's very easy. And in this material world, it is anartha, which is fake currency, which looks like, you know, the right one, but it cannot be used. So it's called the fake currency. And in Golok Vrindavan, the currency is of love, which is beyond the pap, punya and anartha. So what do we understand now with this is that for anartha nivritti, we need the God of law. We follow the principles and we need the rules and regulations, the do's and the don'ts. And therefore, by following the laws, we can establish anartha nivritti. But as Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, that simply anartha nivritti is not enough. We have to have artha pravritti. That after all the anarthas are vanquished, then in the spiritual world, what are we going to do? That is love. That is artha pravritti. So here is the combination which we see. It's not like a compromise which is being struck, but it is a healthy blend of laws and love in our life. God's greatness as well as Lord's sweetness. And therefore, we see that in that particular stage of anartha nivritti, in the conditioned stage, it appears to be hopeless end, but in artha pravritti, it is called endless hope. Because in the spiritual world, it is beyond time and space. So we have to understand these two concepts very categorically. From anartha nivritti to artha pravritti, from hopeless end to endless hope. That is from law to love. So now, these are the things which our sadhana bhakti comprises of. Nam, Rupa, Guna, Leela. Now, if you look into the Naam Rupa Guna Leela of Krishna, you find the greatness in that and also sweetness in that. Okay, let me have from the audience. How do you see the greatness and sweetness in these aspects of Krishna? Mahamantra. Maha. Mahan. Great. Huh? Is that what you mean? So, how Mahamantra, it's a very nice observation about Mahamantra, that how Mahamantra is great also and sweet also. Mahamantra is great, you know, something who is very great, there is power. You know, someone who is very great, you can see that power and all of that strength and these features. So, what is the power and strength of Mahamantra? That mountains and mountains of our sin and unearthers can be totally pulverized and removed, eradicated, eliminated by the power of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. That is the power of Mahamantra. That is the greatness of Mahamantra, that it can purify our heart. And what is the sweetness? Simultaneously it installs love. So two things are happening. Simultaneously, eradication of our contamination and installation of Krishna Prem. So herein you see the combination of Krishna's greatness and sweetness in regards to the Nama. Then of course the Rupa, Guna, Leela, everything about Krishna is blended with the greatness and sweetness, that it can free us from this material world and it can install us in the spiritual world. And that's how we see the pastimes of Krishna, the qualities of Krishna, the form of Krishna, and of course the name of Krishna. Now, here is another interesting term, the law of love. Now, we are talking about laws and love differently. Let's now combine it. Is there a law in love, or love is lawless? Yeah, we might have understood that, you know, law is loveless. Is love lawless? Confusing? Complicated? Yeah, we have, of course, yes, you have something? Should be lawless. But then, can we say that there are certain specifications of that lawless love also to be established, that, you know, certain conditions, and of course we use that word conditions, there are no conditions where there is love. Okay, let's take the example of Putana. Don't want to confuse you with anything else, no dear Cheetah and all that. Let's take Putana. So Putana delivered by Krishna. Was that Krishna was following any law? Krishna was following love. What was it? Putana getting the mercy of Krishna. What particular protocol Krishna was following? Ahobakiyam stana kalakutam jigham shaya payayadapya sadhavi. Lebhe gatim dhatruchitam tatonyam kamva dayalum sharanam rajema. Brahmaji was confused. He is made of intelligence. Okay? And he knows how the laws work, or what are the policies of this world. And according to Brahmaji, with his four heads completely made of intelligence, he was confused when he saw the deliverance of Putana. So, in Putana's case, it is mentioned, let's go into the details, that yes, Krishna was following a certain law, but it was a law of love. Just like when you are in India, there are the Indian laws. When you go to West, there are the Western laws. So, similarly, when in the spiritual realm, the laws are there, But the laws are of a different language. It's a different language. There is a different currency. The currency is there, but it's a different currency over there. So, in regards to Putana, it is explained. We all know the entire story of Putana. Putana enters into Nanda Bhavan, dressed like Lakshmi Devi, like the mother of Krishna, wanting to feed her own milk to Krishna, disguised like that, welcomed by all the Brajabasis, including Rohini and Yashoda. That was the shortest Putana description. So she enters Nanda Bhavan. And when she is entering, what happens is, the Jnana Shakti of Krishna, immediately, you know, the Jnana Shakti of Krishna looks into the motivation of Putana. That why she has come, entire, you know, the history, geography of Putana, Krishna's Jnana Shakti brings all the files of Putana. Krishna, this is Putana, this is her track record, Kamsa had sent, and she has killed so many babies in the past, and you know, everything about, like sometimes you Google someone's name and everything, the history, geography of that person comes like that. So the Jnana Shakti of Krishna brought the entire history of Putana to Krishna. Now imagine, if you were in the place of Krishna and somebody has come to kill you with such deceptive motives, with so much of deceit, and then just before the person is about to kill you, somebody comes and tells you everything about that person. What will be your, you know, reaction? Immediately, na, pata to, ye, immediately your reaction will be, I'll show. So the Jnana Shakti informed Krishna about Putana's everything. So what happened then? The Kriya Shakti. The next is the Kriya Shakti of Krishna. That the Kriya Shakti told Krishna, finish off. No mercy. Khatam kar do usko. Like that. But then what happened was that the Jnana Shakti and Kriya Shakti put together could not convince one Shakti of Krishna, and that was the Kripa Shakti of Krishna. So the Jnana and the Kriya, it came in the category of law, and the Kripa came in the category of love. Like, you know, in the South Indian temples, you have, you know, Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu has Bhudevi and Shri Devi. So, any sinner comes. So, Lord Vishnu doesn't even want to look at a sinful person who comes to have darshan. So, Lord Vishnu looks at Shri Devi. And Shri Devi, Lord Vishnu asks that, what is your opinion about, you know, should I do something about this person? And Shri Devi, she says that, yes, my dear Lord, you have to, because, you know, where will this person go otherwise? And Lord Vishnu says, what are you saying? How can I even look at a sinner like this person? So Lord Vishnu looks at Bhudevi, that what is her opinion? And she says, I completely disregard Shri Devi. And Lord Vishnu, at least you are in my favor. And Bhudevi tells to Shri Devi that somebody who has just desired to come has already purified himself of all the sins. And Lord Vishnu says, helpless, like any other husband. Helpless. Completely helpless. What can I do? And therefore gives all of it. So that is the Kripa Shakti. So when the Kripa Shakti told Krishna that yes, Putana might have come with ill motives. Putana might have been sent by Kamsa, Kamsena, Pranahita Ghora, all of that stuff. But the Kripa Shakti told to Krishna that she has come to feed you milk. It might be poisonous milk, but at least the act is a motherly act. So you are God. Come on. How can you simply just look into the externals of a certain activity? You have to understand that you, as a God, you have to be someone who is beyond a person's motivations and activities and all that stuff. So the Kripa Shakti convinced Krishna to not only purify Putana, but also award Putana the position of his own mother in Golok Vrindavan Dham. Not just any Vaikuntha also, in Golok Vrindavan Dham. So therefore, herein we can understand that laws were trying to confront with the love aspect, the Kripa Shakti of the Supreme Lord. And of course, in Nalkuvar and Manigreve episode also, there was no logic for these two personalities to get delivered. Absolutely no logic, no reasoning. They were engaged in such activities that according to the laws of nature, they were supposed to become trees somewhere. Talking about laws. According to laws of nature, because they were bathing naked, that too with some society girls, drunk, intoxicated. And Narad Muni intervened, so Krishna simply thought of Narad Muni, that Narad Muni has, and Krishna was going, and then he took a turn thinking of Narad Muni, not about Nalkur and Manigreve. That Narad Muni has showered his love, just like here, Bhudevi and Shri Devi and the Kripa Shakti. So Lord said, I have no control because my devotees have offered their Kripa. So herein also, the law of love is seen in Nalkuvar and Manigreve, that somehow they came in contact with a pure devotee like Narad Muni. And that is what we see. So in Damodar Leela, we have the two-finger principle, the most celebrated two-finger principle, and we know its endeavor and mercy. So herein, we have heard so much about the endeavor and the mercy part, that we have to have our endeavor, and the mercy is followed by the Supreme Lord. But our Acharyas has explained that the Lord's mercy, irrespective, is still there. And it's just waiting. And even the endeavor, the Supreme Lord, somehow or the other, it's like, in the negative sense, we find people, they conspiring somebody to get indulged into some kind of sinful activity. So, Srila Prabhupada, we are basing our proposition over here. One of the statements of Prabhupada which is so powerful, I always love this particular statement of Prabhupada. When Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is so powerful that it will drag the practitioner to success. It will drag, you know what dragging means? Even though you don't want to go, it will drag you. And that is what even the endeavor is taken care of by the mercy of Krishna. That's called dragging. That he pushes, and although you are going in the front, but the mercy of the Lord is pushing. And therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, found this one verse from Bhagavad Gita, very famous, which talks about the Damodar principle. The two-finger Damodar principle. And this is from the 9th chapter. Ananyas chintayanto mam ye janah pariupasate tesham nitya bhyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham. In which the first two lines of this verse, it talks about what? Endeavor. Ananya chintayantas mam ye janah pariupasate. So then when somebody is worshipping the Supreme Lord, as the translation says, that exclusive devotion, meditating, then the second finger is the second two lines. Krishna is saying that I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. Yoga kshemam vahamyaham tesha nitya abhyuktanam. So herein we see the two fingers of Damodar principle, in this one verse. And when we come to Krishna consciousness, we may not be able to trace out that what was that ananya chintayanta. For in our case, it was chinta. Ananya chinta. Chinta of so many our own problems and struggles and all of that stuff. But still we find ourselves slowly, gradually, shanai, shanai, progressing in Krishna consciousness. At one point of time, we saw that we were first time entering, somebody was introducing us, you know, to the different aspects of Krishna consciousness, giving us a mala, like, you know, this was one, this was one European temple, one devotee, this was a newcomer, he used to come to the temple and he liked, you know, coming to the temple because he used to come at night, you know, the Shayan Darshan, like that time. And the pujari saw that, you know, new person is coming. So the pujari would bring rabdi from the last offering, would bring rabdi. And you know, it's first time having rabdi. And this is what the concept which I would want to speak upon now. In Krishna consciousness, when we come, it's called the wow factor. So when he got the rabdi, wow, that was, how many times we have experienced, you know, the wow factor in Krishna consciousness. We saw the deity, we had prasad, kirtan, you know, wow. You know, we may not have spoken it aloud, but within the mind. So when this newcomer, he had the rabdi in his hand, wow, what is this? When he tasted, wow, you know, the volume increased. First when he saw, then he smelled. And the volume of that wow was increasing. Had that rabdi, so every day he was coming. That particular time, Shayan Darshan, after the altars would close, the pujari would come with that thing. And then slowly he came, in fact, I myself, this is my own personal experience, the first time when I had this, you know, Krishna Prasad, it was way back, many years, it was Juhu temple. And you know, Juhu temple, they still, the samosas of Juhu temple are very famous. How many of you had Juhu temple samosa? Wow. So, I remember, you know, that samosa which I had, you know, it was like, I can tell you honestly, it was the costliest samosa of my life. It costed my job. I lost my job, you know, I lost my designer clothes, I lost my hair, and still I am paying for it. So that was the costliest samosa, I can say. So, you know, this person, when he had that rabdi, every day he was having that rabdi, and then he came to know that it's not, this is the last offering. Huh? That was the last offering. Then he was told that there is Rajbhog also, there is Sandhyabhog also, there is, before Rabdi there are many other things. So now for that he had to join. So he joined the temple. So when he joined the temple, then after, you know, the whole day's work, then he's, again after the Shayan Darshan, you know, like this, next to the altar, the curtain, he was waiting for the pujari, and the pujari came out with rabdi and he gave it to him, said, here, now give it to him, the newcomer has come, the second one who has come. So now he got the job of creating another wow factor in someone else. So if we look into, like, even the Krishna consciousness movement, if you look into the kind of, like, how Tamal Krishna Maharaj in the previous days, Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Vishnujan Maharaj, it was their strategy. You know, this term I've got, like, you know, from their strategy of wow factor. So Vishnujan Maharaj would sing very, very melodiously. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj would observe during the kirtan who is going, wow, And then he would go to him because he has appreciated kirtan. And it would work. 99% anybody who said wow would take to Krishna consciousness. And I was thinking about, you know, this wow factor, W-O-W, you know. Sometimes you don't even realize. So, without wanting, you come to Krishna consciousness. That is wow. We don't even realize, and we are already, you know, it's like local train of Bombay. You don't even realize you are already out of the train or inside the train. So, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, during the prasadam time also, when new people, when the prasadam they would be having, at that time you would just go and ask, how did you like? And then, you know, looking at the prasadam, they would say, wow, this prasadam is, this thing is great. Yes. So, this is the perennial strategy of Krishna. That Krishna is looking for that wow factor inside. And there are so many different ways and means by which Krishna is inducing us to say that, wow, the creation of the Lord, the elements of the Supreme Lord who has created. And then, of course, the deity form of the Lord. And in regards to the deity form of the Lord, I would like to narrate a recent incident which took place with our Gopalji from Chopati temple. There was one lady, and she used to come for the night Shayan Darshan, very famous over there, the night Shayan Darshan with Kirtan, and the whole ambience is captivating. So she brought a boy, a young boy, teenage young boy came, and he just sat through the Kirtan. He didn't even know who are all those on the altar. You know, even when the altar opens, like sometimes if you have seen the Mayapur altar, immediately, wow, like that, you know, the expression is like that. It's like the 70mm show. So, you know, when the altar opened and the Shayan Darshan began, this boy was just, you know, the Kirtan and, you know, the incense smell and whole permeation, the atmosphere was permeated with Krishna's mercy. This person, he called, you know, our guest reception, Gokulanand Prabhu is in charge. So he called Gokulanand Prabhu just 2 days later, and he asked Gokulanand Prabhu that who was this on the right, you know, the black guy, you know, with a finger like this. And he said, ah, that is Gopalji. So he said that whoever he is, he came in my dream. He came in my dream, and he in Sanskrit spoke something to me. And I was not able to recollect, but some few words I am able to recollect. In Sanskrit he spoke something. So Gokulanand Prabhu asked, what did he speak? So he just blabbered something. So Gokulanand Prabhu wrote it down. And you know, our Madan Gopal Prabhu is a Sanskrit expert. So he referred it to Madan Gopal Prabhu, and Madan Gopal Prabhu also was not able to figure out. So he contacted 5 of the most prominent Sanskrit scholars of India. And that whatever broken Sanskrit referred it to these 5 prominent, you know, differently, they are differently located in India. And all 5 of them, they had the same translation for that. Are you ready? This is Gopalji directly preaching to one teenager from Bombay. Direct counseling. That Sanskrit, what Gopalji uttered to this boy. Enough of your wanderings in this material world. You have come to me. I will give you all the shelter under my lotus feet. That was the exact translation of what he heard. Now, the wow factor has not come yet. The wow factor is this boy was a Christian. And now he's chanting 16 rounds and is regularly coming. And of course, his favorite deity is Shri Gopalji. Now there are n number of stories like that wherein the wow factor of Krishna's mercy has superseded all the laws of any kind of religion which they might impose upon anyone. So in Krishna consciousness, we understand that even if we consciously don't endeavor, again I will repeat that famous statement of Srila Prabhupada, Krishna consciousness is so powerful that it will drag the practitioner to success. And that is our hope. If we simply appreciate Krishna, and yes, we have given us this particular term, the wow factor, we simply appreciate some aspect of Krishna. Krishna is there. If Putna can be delivered, if Nalkur and Manigreev can be delivered, if Jagai Madai can be delivered, we have no excuse that we cannot be delivered in Krishna consciousness. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. I'm a little sorry, just went a overshot time. Would like to inform that tomorrow is the last day of Kartik. So tomorrow, Sunday feast will be a special darshan. Special our this year's Namodarashtakam, the last, of course not the least, the last for this year's Namodarashtakam, we'll be singing tomorrow evening. There'll be special darshan of Radha Madhavji with all the deep around, as today also we'll be seeing. So tomorrow's Kartik, it's a Kartik Purnima, I think. Yeah, it's Purnima. Yeah, it's the last day, so we all invite all of you for the special Sunday feast on this occasion. And our next Parivartan will be a special one because devotees are going on a yatra. So we are having it on a Sunday because we are having a Gita course from 6 to 11. And also we would want Gita course participants to participate in the Parivartan. So it's the month of Gita Jayanti. Marga Shirsh, Krishna spoke Gita in that particular month, the month of December. So our next Parivartan will be 12th of December, and we have an interesting topic. If you are ready for this, Ras Leela on the battlefield. So that's, we'll be speaking from the Mahabharata and the Bhagavad Gita, and how Krishna performed Ras Leela on the battlefield, which is very much pertinent for us, rather than Krishna performing Ras Leela in Rasasthali. Ras Leela on battlefield is very pertinent for all of us. So that will be our next Parivartan, 12th of December, Sunday. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Hare Krishna.